If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
That is us. Welcome to episode 420. We tried a gummy edition of Rico Bronya. Now, first of all, let me give a little parental advisory. Now, we are the same podcast that's done a drunken Rico, so it's not like that hasn't happened before. We decided, or maybe Hoff decided, or maybe an emailer decided. It wasn't me. I didn't decide. Crap. But we figured maybe to honor episode 420, we would have a gummy. Now, what I would recommend is no kids ever try something like that. That is something for adults. Same thing with drinking alcohol. That's not something you should do until you're 21 years old. Now that we got that out of the way, as I've talked about really on the radio, I don't think I've really done it much here on this Rico Bronya podcast. I've been a square. I never smoked a cigarette, let alone did any pot, like literally. And I think it was more that I didn't want to stick the thing in my mouth. I think that was really the issue. So call me a square. That's fine. Call me whatever. It doesn't freaking matter. We were intrigued to do a Rico Bronya on a gummy. Now, what is a gummy? Honestly, I didn't know much about it until the last couple of years, but Pete Hoffman is my gummy guy. So, Pete, before we talk Mets baseball, and we will in this different state that we're in, Ryan Stanek is back, Scott Boris is leaking crap about Pete Alonso, and there's some starting pitching trades we will talk about. We'll do the rewatch in a couple of days. I didn't think it was fair to do the rewatch while, high. So we decided to push that back a few days. But what kind of gummy did we have? And then we can describe how we're feeling.
It's a red one.
It's a red one. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. I didn't really. Okay. So from what I understand, it's a 5 milligram gummy. It is the sativa kind. So, which I understand it goes more to the head high rather than a body high.
Oh, okay.
This is the ones I usually have problems with.
Well, in fairness, Pete started me off with an average dose, right? Wasn't it like a reasonable amount?
Yeah.
So I split the gummy because I was nervous. You know, BT was very kind. He said, Evan, I don't know if this is a good idea. You may say something you regret. I said, I appreciate you looking out for me. Then I brought it up on the air and everyone's like, BT's crazy. There's no issues. And I talked to my wife and my wife told me that in her experiences, what's happened is that she gets very paranoid. And I'm like, well, that'd be interesting. We should do a paranoid Rico Bronya. We'd start to like, I don't know what that would even turn into. But honestly, I put the gummy in my mouth about an hour and a half ago. So I think I am feeling the full effects and I feel very foggy, very relaxed. Definitely chill. I may be screaming a lot less than a normal Rico Bronya. I've been feeling well today. Actually, I'm feeling fine. My voice is a little sore. That is not related to the gummy. But I had a weird thing as I was coming up here. So I'm feeling chill. I'm feeling relaxed. I'm feeling capable of doing a Rico Bronya. No issues whatsoever. And as I'm walking up the stairs, my body felt heavy. It was weird. Like my head weighed 1,000 pounds. I don't know why. And then my legs started to feel heavy. I wasn't going to trip or anything like that. But is that mental or was that just, you know, what the hell was that?
That's the placebo effect, maybe. Maybe that's a little bit too. Because how long would you have this?
So we are recording this, Rico Bronya, at 10:15. If you're watching live on YouTube, how you doing? whatever they tell you to do on YouTube, comment, rate, subscribe, hit the like button. I don't really know this.
Press the button. They go, they would say, press the subscribe button right here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do that. Or just download the podcast. So we're recording this at 10:15 p.m. I think I took the gummy at about 8:30. So what's that, an hour and a half?
Yeah, that was earlier than expected. Some people said do it about a half hour before you guys go on. Some people said do it an hour, hour and a half. So you jumped the gun.
I gave it some extra time. I wanted to see what would happen. So overall, if you're tuning in or listening to the Rico expecting us to be crazy, I don't think we're going to be crazy. I think we're just going to be chill. We're probably going to put you to sleep. It's probably going to be the most boring Rico Prunia of all time. And maybe, you know, we've had some boring Ricos over the years. I mean, what do you want to start with? Ryan Static is back. But either way, I hope that if you are partaking in our very special episode 420, you're doing it responsibly. Don't be an idiot. You know, it made me think about the Drunk Rico. So you could check out the archives if you ever missed the Drunk Rico. But we did that in August, and I was on vacation. And the Mets had just lost a brutal game. And I remember, and this was like a really drunk Rico, because I think the Rico we did a year earlier, I was, I was tipsy, but it wasn't like nuts. This Rico, I had it. I mean, I think I had like 10 maker's marks. It was just, it was stupid. And I'm the kind of drunk, if you will, that's very honest, little lovey, but very honest. And I remember saying, we're not making the playoffs. Y'all deep down know we're not making the playoffs. And it makes me laugh to think about because it aged terribly. And I'm happy about that. Like, obviously, I don't need to be right. I want to be happy. But I do remember that about the drunk Rico. So on this 420 Rico, let me try the same approach. Come on, guys. You know deep down there's no way Pete Alonso's coming back. Too much damage has been done, you know? Steve Cohen's airing the dirty laundry at Amazing Day. Scott Boras is making demands. They've already spent money elsewhere. So, come on, guys. Let's just be honest. Pete Alonso will not be a New York Met in 2025.
I got to be honest, Ev, we're going to have to do that over again. You have to sell it better. I think that Gummy can get his
juice. Got to sell it better.
Yeah, you did.
What does that mean? Here's the thing. Here's why it's not selling well. I don't think I actually believe that. You know, when I did the Drunken Rico and we were very honest, I was honestly from the bottom of my soul spilling out that, hey, I don't think we're going to make the playoffs. This team has done so much painful shit to us over the course of that season. And I don't know. It just felt like deep in my soul. I turned out to be wrong, and that's fine. I love being wrong about that. I was being honest. So let's be honest. Let's have an open, frank conversation about Pete Alonso while under the influence of a gummy. A part of me is starting to get hope again. And I probably shouldn't do that because I've compared this to like the lover or the breakup. You know, the girl dumped you. And you're hanging by your phone thinking, oh, she'll text me this week. We're going to get back together. And that doesn't happen. But what really pointed me in the direction of, I'm starting to think this is going to happen again, is twofold. Number one, let's use our noodle. Why isn't he a Blue Jay? He's not a Blue Jay, potentially, for a few reasons. Let's go through what it could be. Number one, maybe his wife doesn't want to live in Toronto. It's entirely possible. Where would I get something like that? I don't know, but maybe she doesn't want to live there. Is that possible? I don't know. Let's go to possibility. Let's go to possibility number two. The Blue Jays just haven't made a good enough offer. No, possibility two is while they're interested, maybe they're as interested as the Mets are. And that is on that same kind of price line, if you will, that the Mets offered. Number three, Pete Alonso doesn't want to go there. Pete Alonso basically wants to be a Met and told Scott Boras, as the agent that he hooked up with a year ago, I want to stay, but get me the most money. And by the way, if that's the case, everything Scott Boras has done follows that. Like, there isn't anything that tells us that's not the case. He hasn't accepted any other offer. Now, maybe it goes back to point B that there is no better offer, or maybe Scott knows I can't accept any offer anywhere else because my client told me I want to stay with the Mets. That's possible. Those are the three things. And nothing has come out to indicate that something else is going to happen. So I know what Steve Cohen said and everything he says about the luxury tax and the money. I know it's tough sometimes because we think to ourselves, well, he's King Cohen, as Sal calls him, or he's got beautiful money, like I used to say about him. He's also a human being who's going to have his limits. Now, what I love about Cohen is he has shown us at times, screw the limits. Like when he signed Carlos Correa a few years ago, obviously it turned out not to happen. But I do think what he said about their payroll and it being an expensive roster and there's a luxury tax, and by signing Pete Alonso so late in the game, do I want to pay that tax? Do I want to go up above $300 million and leave myself with either less wiggle room at the trade deadline or having to pay another enormous tax? I believe those are all factors, but at the end of the day, I think what points me on this 420 edition of the Rico Bronya to not be negative is I think Pete wants to come back. I don't think his wife wants to live in Toronto. And I think that while the Mets are playing the indifferent game of, well, you know, we got Brett Beatty, it's okay, I think they do want him back at their price. And so it's like Ross and Rachel. You knew they were going to hook up at the end. Like, you knew they were going to end up together. They did. It was like at the airport or something like that. But they ended up together. I guess that's why, Pete, I couldn't sell it. Because deep down in my soul, I think it's going to work out.
Yeah, have they really started talking, though? I don't believe it. Like, maybe I'm just being the pessimistic person because the gummy might have just kicked in about 2 seconds ago. But, like, seriously, I don't buy that they're really talking just yet. Maybe there's, like, a little – maybe there was a note that was passed, hey, we'd like to talk to you again. But I can't believe anything that's going on. We've talked – this is
well, more yeah. than once. Yeah, there, it's tough to believe everything because I think what you have to do – whether you're a fan reading Twitter or talk show host where you want to differentiate between news, things that are just being fed to reporters, you want to get the facts, right? And so I understand the skepticism. Let me give you two things. Number one, this is kind of a funny second person account. We had a bunch of very nice people watching our show today, the show I do with Tiki Barber on WFAN, very nice people. And one of the guys said, hey, I got to tell you something really cool. I said, what do you got? And he was cool with me saying this on the air and saying it on the Rico. He said, I ran into Pete Alonso 3 days ago. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I'm a big Met fan. I couldn't believe it. But Pete Alonso, I ran into him on Sunday. Now, Sunday is the day after Amazing Day. And I said, that's awesome. Where'd you run into him? He said, at the airport. I said, oh, okay. I was at the airport. Yeah, I was on his plane. I was on the same plane as Pete Alonso. I walked past him. I didn't want to stop and say anything because he was sitting in first class. I said, where were you flying to and from? He said, I was from Tampa to Newark. So I got excited. I'm like, wait a second. Hold on. Let me get this straight. So you're telling me you ran into Pete Alonso the day after Amazing Day on Sunday on a flight from Tampa to Newark, New Jersey? He's like, yeah. And I said, oh, this is popping my head with ideas. So Pete heard what Cohen said, heard what happened, and said, okay, taking matters into my own hands, I'm going to fly to New York, New Jersey, and I'm going to meet Steve Cohen. You coincide that with Tuesday night's report from Scott Boras mouthpiece John Heyman, no more than 48 hours after publicly lamenting and seemingly endless saga, Steve Cohen was back in conversation with Alonso's camp. So seeing him on the airplane, which may have nothing to do with it, I completely understand. And Boras mouthpiece saying, hey, Cohen is talking to Alonso's camp. I would tend to believe that there has been some kind of communication.
Okay. Or there was a big event on Sunday night or Sunday.
And I'm not talking about the... Is it going to be a UFC event he was at?
No, the dog show. The dog show was this weekend.
So Pete Alonso went to the dog show? Is that what you're telling me?
Don't they like dogs?
They do.
I thought they were big dog fans.
Well, they do great charity for dogs, but I don't know if that means he was at the... Look, unless you can confirm he was at the dog show, we just have to believe he flew to Newark, New Jersey to say what up to Steve Cohen.
All right. Or was he at the baseball writers event? Was that even a thing?
I don't think so. I don't think Pete a lot, because reporters would try to get a quote from him. I mean, you would try to say what's up. And one thing about Pete, I remember last year and even the year before that, anytime the contract is brought up, he doesn't really want to talk about it. Like, it's not something he's comfortable talking about. And we saw that last year in those press conferences in spring training. Like, he doesn't want to talk about it, even if he resigns. And I do want to address that, because Jimmy Kay was the guy who's emailed a few times about, hey, if they re-sign Pete, how awkward is that going to be? And we've talked about the Jeter scenario with Brian Cashman. I don't really think it's going to be nearly as awkward as anyone thinks, because I think Pete just shuts it down by saying, yeah, it's a business. Yeah, it's a business. Hey, were you hurt? Were you feeling certain in the negotiations? I can't really, man. You know, it's a business. It's just a business. And everybody does it. It's okay. I'm glad to be back, and it's a business. And I think you say that over and over again. You give not answers. You just talk about it being a business, which it is, and that's it, and it's over. I don't think it ever gets brought up again. Like, I don't think the New York media is going to harp about the contract when we're sitting there in the middle of May, either five games over or under 500, and Pete's red hot or two for his last 30. So I think it's a couple of days, and you just cliche the crap out of it with business, 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 and I just don't think there's any awkwardness, you know? And the players want him back. You know, how about Lindor publicly saying he wants him back? Going to Steve Cohen and saying he wants him back. Nimmo did it over the weekend. Jeff McNeil did it the other day. So, look, it just reminds you that Pete Alonso may not be beloved in the locker room, but he certainly liked enough for all the key players to say, yeah, we want him back. And if they didn't want him back, they just wouldn't say anything. You don't have to say anything. And you certainly don't go to the owner. So I'm feeling a little bit more positive, but like a tiny bit off, like a little bit, just a little bit more.
The only worry I have, and you said, like, you know, they're not going to, if he does come back, the media is not going to have them. What is he going to say? They can move on. If it's a 1-year deal, this whole contract thing is going to come up again anyway.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, but that's a year from now. Like, I'll tell you this. Let's say it is a 1-year deal. I don't think it'll be. It'll probably, if it happens, be around that structure that we heard, 3 years opt-outs, all that. You're right. It could turn into a 1-year deal if he opts out, but we're not going to know that. We're going to have to see what kind of season he has. I don't think it'll be talked about and covered the way it was this year, because I think that while I love Pete, a lot of us love Pete, he now becomes their third or fourth best player, especially with Soto here. And I don't think the attraction of, hey, Pete, you thinking this could be your last game at City? Like, I don't think that's a thing. I think it already happened that it's over. So even if it is a 1-year contract, which I don't think it'll be, I don't think it'll turn into that.
So kind of like when Mike Francis retired and then came back.
Yes. That's a great example, because when Mike left the first time, it was an event for the entire year. Then when he came back, it's like, screw it, we're not doing this again.
That's not happening again. When you leave. It's okay.
Yes. Let's get to the Ryan Stanek signing. My opinion on Ryan Stanek and bringing him back for a reasonable amount of money, $4.5 million, is fine. But quite frankly, I include Stanek in the group of arms that you throw against the wall going into a season, and he could give you a dominant year like he did 3 years ago when he had like a 1.5 ERA, or he could be the very average pitcher he's been the last couple of years. I think the reason why most Met fans were happy about the return of Ryan Stanek is that, to his credit, he pitched well in the playoffs.
And he did. He was one of the very, very few arms that we could trust come October. He did not pitch well after the trade. Now the hope is full year spring training, the pitching lab. Why can't Ryan Stanek at 33, 34 years old have one more dominant season? So that's why it's one of those moves, one of those typical reliever moves on a one-year deal where I kind of call it the shrug your shoulders move. AJ Minter, you have more hope for, more confidence, and more, hey, you better pitch well. Obviously, Edwin Diaz is top of the line. And then you've got those relievers who, you know, Adam Ottavino has actually been one of those guys, and we've seen the full effect of it. First year he was here, Otto pitched great. For all you guys that don't like him, he was very good his first year. And then, you know, we saw the bad of Adam Ottavino. So Ryan Stanek is one of those relievers. Now, you get him back at about $5 million, and as Andy Martino reported, and certainly your logic could take you there, hey, Cohen talks about an expensive roster. It's better to sign Stanek on a cheapish deal as compared to one of those more top-end relievers. Kenley Jansen? That's surprising. We talked about him as a free agent, but never thought the Mets would have a serious interest. So is it better if it keeps the door ajar for Pete Alonso? Sure, absolutely. Like I said, I know not everyone agrees with me. I was arguing with somebody on DM about Pete Alonso, where my point is everyone agrees the Mets are better off with Pete Alonso coming back. It's just more the contract structure. Like, if Steve Cohen is good with the money and the contract's reasonable, I don't understand why you wouldn't want Pete Alonso back. Actually, let me live read and respond to this guy. He's a good guy. We play baseball together when I ran Twitter baseball. So he's not a bad guy. But
is he just emailed you?
So I have open DMs. I'm an open book. So he DM'd me. I'll read it to you. It's a good exchange. So we can have this kind of, you know. I am feeling kind of screwed up now, actually. Like, not screwed up, just very, like, funky. I'm on a cloud, you know?
I think that's what the gummy is called, funky gummy.
Is that? Oh, look at that. Jackpot. No,
it's not.
So he writes, I do not think Pete Alonso is the best option. We don't agree on that. It's okay if he comes back. I think the Mets end up with Ryan Mountcastle or Spencer Torkelson. Cheaper options and decent players. So I wrote back, if there was a salary cap, you'd have a point. Since there isn't, you're obviously wrong, which is kind of douchey, but let me frame this point better before I get to his response. If money's not a problem, okay, and we have the daddy rich owner, then you would rather have Ryan Mountcastle platooning with Brett Beatty than Pete Alonso. There's no way you really think that. Or, hey, I'd rather have Spencer Torkelson. Look, Spencer Torkelson could turn out to be a star. He hasn't done it yet. And I've expressed that I'm high-ish on him if Alonso isn't back. But again, if the money isn't a problem, and this is not a capped league, it's a taxed league. There's a big difference. And daddy is willing to pay the tax bill. Then how could you possibly prefer Spencer Torkelson over Pete Alonso? With that said, here's the gentleman's response, because we need to be fair. That's not the point. If Alonso was worth the money, I'd pay him. Salary cap or not, he's not worth what he's asking for. Like I said, if he's here, fine. If he's not, they can do just as well. And there is a luxury tax, by the way. Obviously, I pointed out, if the owner is willing to spend on that tax, not your problem, not something I'm going to complain about. Let's get to the worth the money thing, because I find this interesting, and I appreciate this exchange because I do think he represents a portion of the fan base. If the owner is willing to pay, I'm saying the same thing, but it comes back to the same point. If the owner is willing to pay him the salary, then why do you care if it's more than you think he's worth? Comprende? Like, this is such a different discussion in the NFL. Like, the Barkley discussion was, hey, salary cap, offensive line, is it bet? I get it. It's a very nuanced debate. Same thing in the NBA. But if it is up to an owner to just be willing to spend, then why do you care? Did you see what I'm saying?
I get that all the time. And that's why I always say, like, to me, my expectations are we have a rich owner. We have an opportunity to go and get anybody, including Pete Alonso, including Vlad Guerrero. And people tell me, well, no, that can't happen. Why? You have the richest owner in the league. He's $21 billion he's worth.
If he's willing. Like,
if he's willing. But again, my expectations are, he's got a ton of money. He's going to want to spend it. The same way the other guy's going to say, well, you can't spend this amount of money. No one's going to do it. He's not worth it.
Well, but the caveat is, like, we can't assume Steve Cohen is willing to always spend the money. That's why the caveat is if he's willing, because he said at Amazing Day, we have a very expensive roster. Like, he may deem, I'm not paying Pete Alonso $25 million a year, especially when it's pushing me past this Cohen tax where now I got to pay 110% on every dollar. And Cohen will do that. Like, I don't think Steve Cohen, throughout his entire tenure as owner, is always going to blow through the luxury tax. So there are going to be moments where, and like, I'm still at that moment because I even said to him, and I'll say it again, if the owner's willing, I'm good with it. I understand that we're talking about a willingness to pay a tax. If that is going to be treated like a hard cap because the owner doesn't want to pay a tax, then yes, our evaluation on how much you want to pay a player, especially when it's only separated by a few million dollars, becomes more pivotal. So right now, signing Alonso for $23 million versus $25 million, like, you're going to say, well, he's worth $23, I'm good with it. But he's not worth $25, I'm against it. The whole money thing is out. I think baseball debates, money debates in baseball is so weird because you are dealing with a willingness, not a can't. In the NFL, you can't spend more. In the NBA, you can't spend more. In baseball, you could have a $1 billion payroll if the owner is willing to spend it. So then you have these arguments like Yankee fans are having of, how's not spending enough? Hey, you're the Yankees. You're not spending enough. And it's like, I understand having that opinion, but what's enough? I mean, what should it be $1 billion? So it's a convoluted debate. I hate it because we don't know what the willingness of an owner is to spend.
Yeah, no, it's, you're not wrong. We know that, but we do know the, depending on, like, there's 30 teams of baseball, and let's be serious, what, 16 of them don't spend a dime?
Yeah.
And then you have like 5 to 6 others that really go all in, and there's some other teams in between. I mean, you know that any of these owners can spend the money. They have it. That's why it's disappointing when the luxury tax gets handed down to these teams and they don't spend it.
Here's the difference. I think we need to, not we need to, I guess you could scream and yell and bitch about whatever you want. Our owner, not the Yankees. This ain't the Hensley Mullins. Our owner is mostly spending his money because the Mets don't make as much as the Yankees. They don't. They don't make as much as the Dodgers. They don't. The attendance last year, which certainly helps in terms of money you bring in compared to local TV deal, national TV deal, the Mets didn't draw well last year. You know, it's not like we had, you know, 3 million people filling the ballpark. So our owner is more a willingness on his part to lose less money or lose more money. You know what I mean? By spending. So I think it is different with the other, I mean, not really with the other, but with the Yankees is really what I mean. The Yankees and the Dodgers, they bring in so much more money. So, yeah, I'd certainly hope you're reinvesting in players.
It is funny because we just talked about how, you know, Steve Cohen spent $800 million on Juan Soto. At 760 right now, but going to be 800.
Yes.
They just put out, like, all the relief pitchers that got signed today. There's like 6 or 7 of them.
Yeah, busy day.
Busy day. And there's, like, you know, a couple guys that made $10 million, a little bit more than that, whatever it is. And then you see the Mets 1 year, $4.5 million. Like, they have the richest owner, but yet somehow they still make all these small deals.
Hey, man, it adds up, bro. Shit adds up, man. Let me get to these Padre rumors.
Oh, yeah.
So look, the Padres are in a weird spot because the owner passed away and the wife is fighting over the team with his brother. It's a weird thing. So it's tough to figure what they're doing. They were in on Roky Sasaki. They didn't get him. And now there's an idea that they could trade Dylan Cease or Michael King, or maybe both. So Both guys, and this is very, very important, both guys are free agents at the end of this season. I'd call them rentals. You know why I'd call them rentals? You know why I would say if the Mets are trading for Dylan Cease or Michael King, they're rentals, even though you could re-sign them? David Stearns is giving us his playbook. He's not going to give 6-7 year contracts, 5-year contracts to guys in their 30s. Not going to happen. So we need to express that before we talk about a trade. Michael King is 30, okay? Or he's going to be 30, I think, in May. So this is his age 30 season, which means if he builds off of the great year he had last year, he will get to free agency and he'll be 31. I can do math. David Stearns has shown no inclination, zero, into paying that kind of aged pitcher a 5 or 6 year deal. So if you trade for Michael King, you are renting Michael King. Dylan Cease is a year younger, more reliable. To me, not the same upside as Michael King, which is why I prefer Michael King, but more on that in a few minutes. Dylan Cease is 29, okay? So he's a little bit younger, which is crazy because he's been doing it longer. Next year, he's a free agent. He's 30. Do we think that based on the track record of David Stearns, who's been here now for 2 off seasons, do you think he's signing either guy to their market value, which is going to be like a 7-year contract for big, big money? The answer is.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Probably not. So that doesn't mean let's not have the discussion. It means let's have the discussion knowing this is a rental. This is a 1-year thing. I am much more open to rent this than I am Vladimir Guerrero Jr. To me, it's not even close. Why would you say such a thing? I'd say such a thing because I think reliable starting pitches, especially top-end guys on a rental, you know, could impact this team more so than the package that will be more expensive to get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Now, as far as the package for Cease and King, you know, Pat Regazzo has done a great job reported the idea of a 10th to 15th ranked Met prospect and paying off Starling Marte's contract. Let me tell you something right now. If A.J. Preller and the San Diego Padres are going to take a 10th to 15th ranked Met prospect, and I love Marte. I like Marte. I did a whole Rico. Bring him back. But you're going to train him, and you're going to eat part of his salary, and you're going to get back Michael King or Dylan Cease. I mean, my God, what? Are you serious? Let's go. I'll take 7 gummies, and we'll all go to California and liberate everybody and have a good old time. Like, are you kidding me? That can't be like a real return, because you would think that the Braves would beat that, that a lot of teams would try to beat something like that. So then it gets much more difficult. Cease or King. Again, I think they're 1-year rentals just based on the track record. So it really comes down to 2025. Who's going to perform at a higher level in 2025? That's where I put my chips in the table, and I say Michael King. He was better last year. It was his first full year as a starter, so he doesn't have the same reliability as Dylan Cease, but I think he's got the dominate ability. So I'd prefer King. But how far are we going? I saw a proposed trade on SNY, and the proposed trade was Drew Gilbert, Jose Buda. Stop right there. Time out. I'm not doing that. I am not trading Drew Gilbert, number one, and I'm certainly not trading a pitcher who I have control of, who very well could be the next Michael King next year, for 1 year of a pitcher. Not doing it. So while I'm open to talking about it, that trade I wipe my ass with. No Drew Gilbert and Jose Budo for Dylan Cease or Michael King. I'm sorry. I'll just say it right now.
No, when I saw that, I couldn't stop laughing because, I mean, Juan Soto got Michael King. You know what I mean? And four other players. We're going to sit there and from Michael King now just hand over the world. Great numbers last year, but for the first time in his history, pitched like that for a full season. You can't sit there and start giving away the world for Cease and Michael King.
I'll take it a step further. If you're going to, okay, if you are, hey, give me that 1 year of Michael King, then you better re-sign Pete Alonso. Then you better go past that luxury tax, because that is, as the kids like to say, an all-in move. Like a, hey, we better win move. You know what I mean? Kind of like the Yankees did with Juan Soto last year. They knew the risk, except they wanted to re-sign the player. I'm not convinced, based on the track record, and I'm not arguing the fight right now with David Stearns, just the track record of he doesn't want to give long-term deals to guys in their 30s, especially starting pitchers. They're not going to be re-signed. So I don't love that kind of rental, but if you're going to do that kind of rental, I think you then definitely have to bring Pete Alonso back because you're clearly in go for it mode. So I would be pretty excited about Cease or King adding to this rotation. Like, I'm picking King over Cease. It doesn't mean I wouldn't want Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease fits the reliability card. We've talked a lot about that during the offseason. Should be great to get an ace. I don't think Dylan Cease is an ace. I think aces, and that term is well overrated now, but he's very reliable. You can write his ass down for 190 innings every single year. He never gets hurt. Knock it on wood, because I don't mean any ill will towards him. So that would excite me. And obviously the potential aceness of Michael King from a year ago. But I think a trade, I'm trying to think of like a, I want to be fair trade. Like, paying down Marte's contract is absolutely something that would be enticing, because if you make Marte he's due $21 million. If the Mets paid more than half of it, and now Marte is an $8 million player to the Padres, that's a really good addition for a team that's going to try to maintain going for it while trading one of their pitchers away. So I do think there's a value in that. And that would be Cohen using the power of the checkbook. The more you pay on Marte, the more valuable just as a baseball player he is. We attach the contract so much to players that we don't think, hey, that guy would actually be good. You know what I mean? So I do think that adds value to it. A lot of Jeff McNeils have been thrown out. I just don't think he fits there. You know, they're looking to deal Luis Arise. They got Jake Cronenworth. Like, I think Jeff McNeils just redundant. So I don't think he adds a lot of value. So then it's like, all right, which of these prospects? You want to go Ronnie Mauricio? His value took a hit off a torn ACL. You want to go lower down the prospect rankings? Maybe it's multiple guys who are in that 10 to 15 range. So I think that is the fair trade. Like, I think Starling Marte and then not the one, but multiple prospects that are in that 15 to 10 range, maybe a little bit higher, something of that nature. That to me would be a relatively fair trade that I would make. Would you make that?
I don't know. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
It hit me about 10 minutes ago, and I've been hanging on every word, but just that.
What, are you going to fall asleep? Is that what's going to happen?
No, I'm wide awake. Has it not hit you at all?
I'm pretty hit. I don't know what you want me to do. What you want me to do? You want me to do dance? I mean, what you want me to do?
No, but you said you got funk. You said it's funky. I don't know what funky means.
Like in a cloud? Like chill? Like, I mean, here's the one thing I've learned. When I drink and now when I take a gummy, it just makes me happy, and it makes me happy. Like, even in that drunk Rico, I was happy. I was merely giving my deep thoughts that they weren't going to make the playoffs. That's all. I wasn't like, I wasn't like that. I wasn't like, screw everybody.
No, except for the Mets, except for the making the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I was just being honest. I didn't think they were going to make it. That's all it was. That's all I was thinking. I think the Mets with the starting pitching, by the way, I want to go through what they have. So right now they have five locked starting pitchers, right? I think we'd all agree with that. Five guys who, if they are healthy, are guaranteed rotation spots. Manaea, Peterson, Senga, Holmes, and Montas. They're all guaranteed spots in the rotation. So if they had a starter, it's really the guaranteed sixth guy, which eliminates Griffin, Canning, Paul Blackburn as like options in case somebody gets hurt. The sense I get is they're not going to add somebody unless like this really awesome opportunity comes around. Like Dylan Cease, like Michael King, like Jack Flaherty. I don't see it, man. I really don't. And I get it. Like, it's easy to say because it's true. Well, Jack Flaherty is better than Griffin Canning. Sure he is. I mean, Griffin Canning is unproved on that kind of consistent level. But I think they're waiting for the opportunity. And maybe there will be. You know, maybe late as we get closer to spring training, maybe there is going to be that starting pitcher like Cease, like King, but maybe someone else that pops available and it actually becomes a reasonable price for them. But right now, you have those five starting pitchers. And then you've got Canning and Blackburn, who, unless they're traded, are guaranteed roster spots. They don't have any options left. So you're talking about seven guys who are basically guaranteed, who can start or come out of the bullpen. I'm not even including Buddo, who's guaranteed a spot now too, because he doesn't have any options. And I doubt he'll be in the rotation. Like, I think if they have just a crap ton of injuries in spring training, maybe, but I assume he's now locked into this bullpen. And now you have a bullpen of Diaz, Minter, Stanek, Garrett, Dednell Nunez, and then a bunch of guys battling for those last two spots. So I like the bullpen. I think it's decent. I like the addition of Stanek. I think, like I said, he's throwing it up against the wall. Could they add another reliever? Yeah, I'd like to add Tim Hill. I would like another lefty in that bullpen. Hennessy Cabrera, maybe he makes the team. But right now, Tim Hill would give you that certainty. And there's a part of me a little worried about Minter with this hip issue. Hopefully, it's not going to be a problem whatsoever. So you add me Tim Hill, who's not going to cost any money. You save those shekels for jumping on Pete. And you keep yourself abreast of any possibility to add a good top of the rotation starting pitcher. And away we go. Spring training's in 2 weeks. Can you believe it?
I can't. But wasn't there conversation about a six-man rotation? Like, that's what I feel like. You know, you're talking about Buddo.
Yeah.
You said there's five guys. I feel like one of those guys that you're talking about, there's two spots open. They're going to be slotting into that sixth spot in the rotation.
There is a six-man rotation. Like, it's happening. There'll be times where they cut to five, but no, they're going six-man. I think it's Griffin Canning and Paul Blackburn. You got two guys who are Blackburn's established. Canning's, I mean, he's had moments. He did pitch a lot last year. But you've got two swingish back-of-the-rotation guys that take that sixth spot. And I think Buddo and McGill probably go to the bullpen, but they too can be options. So the point is, it's not impossible to add another starting pitcher, because just because they have five guaranteed guys, like I said, they're going to go six man, but I don't think they're going to do it for a low level guy, because I think they already have a lot of low level guys. I think Griffin Canning, Paul Blackburn, Tyler McGill, I mean, they're all kind of the same. Not, and I don't mean stuff wise. I meant, you know, back of the rotation guys. Maybe they can help you out of the bullpen. So that's what I mean. Like, yeah, it'll be a six-man rotation, but as of right now, that sixth guy is Paul Blackburn. In a few weeks, maybe that sixth guy becomes Clay Holmes or Frankie Montas because they traded for a top-line guy. Have you thought about the opening day question? Have you thought about it?
I have it written down next to me.
I asked Pete to write it down when we asked this about a week ago. Who should start opening day? You ready to do it? You want to do a big reveal?
I can't find, oh, here it is.
Did but you that was other things. Paper?
No, but there's other things written on it now, so I can't say it. But I'll scream it.
Hold on. Oh, I was gonna. You want to scream it at the same time? I was gonna hold up a piece of paper, but we can scream it.
Well, no. I got the paper.
All right. Let me write down. So we're writing down the name of who we think should start opening day for the New York Mets. Who is their opening day starter? And yeah. I mean, you got really three choices, mostly two. Kodai Senga, David Peterson, or Sean Manaea. Those are the three. I mean, Clay Holmes is starting opening day. Yeah, I guess guys get hurt. I mean, Tyler McGill started an opening day. So you know, it could happen. There could be a scenario where Paul Blackburn is starting opening day. But hypothetically, everybody's healthy. Now, you got your piece of paper or are you still struggling?
I'm still struggling. Hold on. We're writing it down.
Yeah, I love him, but he's a mess.
You what, dude? This
I'm
is.
I'm a
you're
mess.
Over there. You're over there sneezing.
Yeah, I know, man. I had COVID 2 weeks ago. What the hell do I have now? It's ridiculous.
A flu. I don't know how to spell it. All right, here we go.
All right, here we go. One, two, three. Going to hold up at the same time. Yeah, we both wrote Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea is the answer we're looking for. Yeah, I like Kodai, and Kodai had a great rookie season. And I don't blame him for what happened last year. It sucks. He got hurt. Things happen. And then, you know, they bring him back for the playoffs. But Manaea had a moment with us. He bonded with us. And up until the end, unfortunately, game six, he was really good in a big spot. So I think that deep connection that Manaea has with the Met fan, to me, makes it the decision. Opening day starting pitcher, Sean Manaea.
There's no doubt about it. Again, unless something crazy happens and he has to miss the first like 5 days of the season, because that never happens with our actual starting pitchers.
Well, I will tell you something very interesting that may be a factor here. The Mets open with six games on the road. And it's weird. They actually have the first Sunday of the year off, which is bizarre. But that's because they play Thursday, Friday, Saturday in Houston. They're off, I think, Monday. And then they play three games in Miami. They're not off. It's three games in Houston, off day Sunday. Three games in Miami, off day Thursday. And then the home opener. Why I bring that up is if Mendy goes six-man rotation, that would mean whoever starts on opening day would then get to come back and start opening day at Citi Field, which is not a common thing, right? Usually the days don't work out. So it's a double deucer in that opening day starter, Sean Manaea Thursday in Houston, Sean Manaea opening day starter at home against the Blue Jays, which would be very special, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Especially if Pete Alonso is playing for the Blue Jays.
Oh, I guess they that. They're going to say the Mets, the Blue Jays. Jesus. Yeah, that'd be awkward. All I know is now I'm falling asleep. Now I'm getting very sleepy, very tired. So what I will say is thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for chilling here on this 420 edition of Rico Bronya. We will do our rewatch opening day 1985. That will be coming up in just a few days, I promise. So for those that were expecting it, it wouldn't have been fair to Carter and the Mets to do it as a 420 episode. I mean, the 85 Mets, 420, actually, it would have been perfect. It would have been perfect. So, my apologies. Anyhow, thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.